from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. California Democratic lawmakers are condemning President Trump's racist and inaccurate tweets over the weekend. He targeted four members of Congress, all women of color, writing that they should, quote, go back and help fix the totally broken and crime-infested places from which they came, end of quote. Here's Senator and presidential candidate Kamala Harris this morning.
It is absolutely racist and un-American, and it is an old trope. Go back to where you came from. You might hear it on the street, but you should never hear that from the President of the United States.
Coming up on Forum, we'll get your reaction to the President's comments and preview the week in Washington. And that's next, after the news. Welcome to this morning's Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. President Trump took to Twitter again yesterday, this time to seemingly tell the four progressive Democratic congresswomen, New York Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Michigan Representative Rashida Tlaib, Minnesota Representative Ilhan Omar, and Massachusetts Representative Ayanna Pressley, that they should, quote, go back and help fix the totally broken and crime-infested places from which they came, end of quote. Three of the four congresswomen were born in the United States, and Representative Omar came to the United States at 10 and became a U.S. citizen at 17. But Trump's insinuation that they aren't American has many, including House Democrats, calling these tweets racist. And Trump, however, isn't backing down, and this morning called for the congresswomen to apologize to the country and the office of the president. We're going to discuss the significance of these tweets. You can weigh in right now at our toll-free number. It's 866-733-6786. Let me give that number again, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org. And later in the hour, we're going to take up the latest immigration news. But first, let me bring Congresswoman Zoe Lofgren into this. We're going to go to her in just a moment. But let me tell you who actually we have assembled here on a panel, making sense of the news of the day. KQED senior editor of the California Politics and Government Desk, Scott Schaefer, is here with us in studio. Good morning, Scott.
Hi, Michael.
Hi to you. And hi to Anita Kumar, who's joining us by phone, White House correspondent and associate editor for Politico. Welcome, Anita Kumar. Good to have you back.
Thanks for having me back.
And Anita's with us via Skype, and Philip Bump is also with us, national correspondent for The Washington Post. Welcome, Philip Bump. Good to have you back.
Thank you, sir.
Let me begin with Scott Schaefer, who's here in studio. We're going to hear shortly from Congresswoman Lofgren. But we've got mostly Democratic Congress representatives here in California. There was certainly a split between Congresswoman Pelosi, the House Speaker, and these particular representatives. What are we hearing from legislators here in the state?
Well, I think that Donald Trump has managed to do what Nancy Pelosi was having a hard time doing, which is to unify the Democratic caucus. The fissures and the disagreements within the Democratic caucus in Congress are real, but this series of tweets by the president over the weekend have allowed the party at least temporarily to come together. They now have a common enemy, or are reminded of what who their common enemy is. That doesn't resolve the underlying problems within the caucus, but it does at least temporarily give them all something else to focus on. And this is, you know, for better or worse, this is what Donald Trump does. He is so obsessed with dominating the news cycle that he, whether or not it's politically smart, he does things and says things that make him the center of attention, that make him in charge of what the agenda is. He may change the agenda later today, but at least for now, we're all focused on this, which is the result of, some tweets over the weekend.
Radio silence from Republicans. I guess Lindsey Graham said, you should aim higher to President Trump. Chip Roy, Texas congressman who's a Republican, said some things about unity and the like, but for the most part, there's been silence. However, there hasn't been silence, obviously, from Democrats, and we wanted to get Congresswoman Lofgren on and hear what she had to say. So, Lofgren, good to have you back with us in Forum. Welcome to the program.
I'm always happy to be with you.
Well, let's get your response and what your thinking is.
We're focusing on his idiotic tweet or on the new proposed asylum regulations?
No, we're talking about the tweets at this point.
Well, I think, ignorant, boorish, what can you say, bigoted. We knew that before, but really it's disgraceful to attack duly elected members the House of Representatives somehow try and infer that they're not real Americans is just disgusting.
Well, some are saying, you use the word bigoted, some are using stronger words like racist and xenophobic and words that are really condemning the president and saying, in fact, white nationalism is what we're hearing from these representatives who've been condemned by him.
I don't disagree with that.
And what about your party now? I mean, Scott Schaefer, as we just heard, was sort of giving us some sense of how things have been divided. In fact, the Washington Post, I believe it was, that said that Speaker Pelosi had isolated these four representatives.
I think that's really overblown, honestly. I mean, we have a large freshman class. These four women, you know, I like them all. They have managed to be a focal point of attention, which I think is, you know, a great talent that they have. They represent their districts and the viewpoints of their districts. There are other freshmen that, you know, represent districts that are, you know, not exactly the same. Obviously, you know, it's a diverse party, you know, ethnically, on gender, on viewpoint. But, you know, that we've got the knives out for each other. It's just not the case. It's not, the reporting is over the top.
You think the president will, in effect, cause more division, or will this bring you closer together and more unified?
Well, I think, you know, it makes it clear that whatever divisions on policy basis that we might have on the Democratic side, it pales into insignificance compared to the differences we have between any of us and him.
Congresswoman, thank you so much for joining us.
That's You're welcome.
Congresswoman Zoe Lofgren. Let me go now to Anita Kumar. And Anita, what's happening in terms of talking this back? We got a new press secretary up in Capitol Hill, I mean, she, at the White House. I mean, is this going to make any difference in terms of how this is going to be responded to, do you think?
Well, yes, we do have a new press secretary, Stephanie Grisham, but we haven't seen her much out there talking for the president yet. There hasn't been any briefings and she hasn't been on camera. I mean, the bottom line is the White House remains the same as it really has been for the last couple of years. President Trump is his own press secretary and his own communications director. He decides when he wants to come out there and say something, whether he wants to respond to something. And, you know, a lot of people might have thought yesterday when he first made these tweets that, you know, of course he'll go back and clarify, or he'll say that this was, you know, not what he really meant to say. But no, I mean, this is a man who often just goes on the second day and says, he sort of doubles down on it, says, no, this is exactly what I was talking about. I mean, his response, people are talking about today, which is, not only did I mean it, but their response, the Democrats' response makes them racist. So he never really backs down. And that's part of his MO. And honestly, it's part of the thing that a lot of his supporters really like about him, that he has this blunt talk and he doesn't back down.
And Philip Bump, I think it's your notion that the supporters, this base as it's often referred to, really is behind the president, not so much really even having to do with economics as having to do with race.
After the 2016 election, there was a lot of conversation about how his win was powered by economic anxiety. It was sort of the buzzword. We've seen a lot of research since, and we've seen a lot of polling since that suggests that there was a lot of his support, which was driven by concern about race, driven by concern about white Americans feeling as though they were displaced in the country. And I think that we're seeing that reflected both in what Trump is saying now, but also more broadly what he's been saying since he's been in politics. I mean, this is a person, you know, I think most of us by now can sort of recite the litany of questionable things related to race, related to immigration that President Trump has said since he announced his candidacy. All of those things combined build up an impression which his followers are often quite explicit about embracing. And I think that these tweets reinforce that. It's not certainly not going to, I think, expand his base outward, but it is definitely the sort of thing that his base was appreciative of when he was campaigning.
And what about the immigration issue and all this? I mean, it is central, obviously. It's been the focal point of this. And the argument goes that, well, you hear it from the Republican side, you hear it from Fox News, the Democrats are trying to bring in more voters. That's what it's really about. Schumer et al. Were at one time very tough in their talk on immigration. Obama deported more people than Trump has deported. And so these arguments get floated around that this is really about bringing in more voters and opening up the borders. Philip Bump?
Yeah, I mean, we've heard this before, and actually during the campaign, President Trump said that if he didn't win, it would be the last time a Republican would win because Hillary Clinton would open up the borders and all these people would come in and vote Democrat. Now, it's interesting for a variety of reasons, you know, one of which being that once someone becomes a citizen of the United States, if they do so, of course they should have the ability to vote. I mean, that's part of citizenship. And so the implication is that you would also give all of these migrants citizenship. I mean, it is a scare tactic that is used to sort of often give a veneer of, well, we're just reflecting the political reality here, when in reality it's pretty far divorced from what anyone has proposed or would be the likely outcome of allowing more people into the country.
Well, we're going to go right to some listener responses. In fact, let me mention that we are talking about the National Political News and Review, not just the tweets of the presidents this morning. But I did say I wanted to hear from listeners. And let's begin with Tom from Fremont. Tom, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. My question to the congresswoman is, should it not be Trump? And I don't call him President Trump. Should it not be Trump who should be the person who should be apologizing to the nation for having demeaned the office of the president?
I'm sorry, Tom, we bid our adieu to Congresswoman Lofgren, but what about that question? Let me go to you on this, Anita Kumar. I mean, the president doesn't seem to, how shall I say, absorb any of that kind of criticism. I mean, during the campaign, he said, nobody can be more presidential than I can be. Those words were certainly heralded by many, and yet they come back to us now when he is acting so obviously unpresidential in terms of bringing the country together, unifying the country.
Right. I mean, that criticism is a constant criticism. You're hearing people say that every day. Occasionally, you might even hear some Republicans saying that. But he doesn't, he just doesn't engage on that issue. He thinks what he is doing is fine, and he won't go there. I mean, as I said before, there are times where you think a person might say, oh, I didn't mean to say something, or you've misinterpreted what I said. But he doesn't do that. I mean, part of what he does is he reiterates what he said before, and he just kind of puts it in your face. He doesn't buy into this issue of something's presidential, not presidential. And so I really don't expect him to do that. In fact, I expect him to sort of be talking a little bit more like this as he hits the campaign trail. I mean, he's announced his reelection, obviously. He's starting to do that. We're going to see a lot more campaign rallies from him and him doing political events. And so I think we're going to hear more language from him like this than less.
Scott Schaefer, you think we're talking about here is Republicans saying, let Trump be Trump?
Well, I think haven't heard Republicans really say anything about this.
Radio silence.
Pretty much. I mean, even people like Mitt Romney, I was checking his Twitter feed this morning because he's somebody who has in the past on occasion spoken out nothing on his Twitter feed, at least as of an hour and a half ago. I think what has happened is this is now the party of Trump, and people who have criticized him in his own party have either retired, like Bob Corker and Jeff Flake, or they have left the party, like Justin Amash, the congressman from Michigan. But they have realized that going up against Trump, you have to pick your battles very carefully because who wants to be the target of this individual? Because with his social media and the bully pulpit and everything else, threats to primary them. There are no profiles in courage coming out of the Republican caucus this morning. I'm sure privately a lot of them are saying this is really completely inappropriate, racist, whatever, but I haven't seen very much of anything. Even Lindsey Graham's comments were extremely measured.
I'm just saying to your golfing partner, tamp it down a bit. Maybe,
yeah, the basic message is right. You just have to fine tune it a little bit. But, you know, I think we need to say that all of this, we haven't talked about the ICE raids that were threatened but haven't really materialized, the ones that the president said were coming over the weekend.
All goes back to immigration, as I said earlier. Not only that, but, you know, the president has pretty much singled them out because they were opposed to the bill that was going through Congress.
Well, I think it does go back to immigration. But remember when he was running for president and he told his base, and it was, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but he said, this is your last chance to save the country. And that was many people interpreted as a dog whistle about the changing demographics in this country. And I think all of the things we've seen in the last 2.5 years now, the family separations at the border, making it harder to seek asylum, just a week or two ago, getting rid of interpreters in immigration court and replacing them with like video messages, the citizenship question on the census, the threats of the raids, the comments about these congresswomen. These are all aimed at sending a message to his base that we have to stay together, that the country is going to change irreversibly unless we hold the tide here at the border and elsewhere. And all of this rhetoric is really aimed at fear, instilling fear so people don't vote, they don't register, they don't they don't go to work in some cases to avoid potential ICE raids. They don't fill out the census forms. I mean, if you look at it now, well, there's a track record now, and that's really what this is all about, instilling fear and stoking the base. And it's just, you know, it's more, I don't want to say more of the same, because that sort of dismisses it as not important, but it is very much part of a pattern.
Again, Scott Schaefer is senior editor for KQED's California Politics and Government Desk. And Mike writes, President Trump's positioned his tweets as standing up for his respected adversary, Nancy Pelosi, against these rookies. Let me go to more of your calls and find out what your thoughts are on this and any questions you might have. We go to Kevin next. Kevin, join us. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So it's been pretty difficult for Republicans to defend Trump for not being racist. But with him ending asylum claims for some Central Americans, that's blatantly racist. If it wasn't racist, he would end asylum claims for anyone from any country, right? It's clearly targeted at people of Hispanic origin.
Yeah, well, thank you for that call. In fact, I want to go back to Anita Kumar on this, because, Anita, we've got Scott mentioned a lot of things that are in the mix here with respect to immigration, but one of them is restrictions on asylum from those from the Northern Triangle, and that is pretty much moving along right now, which also has with it the idea of imposing tariffs on Mexico for not doing enough. Those things are pretty much in a trajectory now, are they?
Yes. I mean, the president and his aides have been pretty clear that they feel like they need to stop the number of people coming into the United States. And in order to do that, they're enacting a number of policies. They're changing different people that run the Department of Homeland Security so that they can get tougher. And you mentioned, and the caller mentioned, the asylum regulation, and that's something that the Trump administration has been talking about for some time. It would not just apply to those from Central America, but obviously that would be the bulk of the people. And what this says is that people that are passing through another country would have to seek asylum elsewhere, not just in the United States, or not when they come to the United States. And it's to slow down the number of people coming. There are a number of things that the administration is looking at that people say are racist, that he wouldn't be doing this otherwise. And if you ask the administration, they say, well, we have this crisis and we have to lower and reduce the number of people coming over the border. And this is something that he really wants to talk about in the next year or two, sort of how he helped the immigration crisis and help reduce the number of people coming into the United States.
Anita Kumar is White House correspondent and associate editor with Politico, and Philip Bump is national correspondent with Washington Post. I'd like to get your thoughts, Philip Bump, on, well, initially when House Speaker Pelosi criticized what's known as the Squad, these four representatives, the Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez came back with some strong words about her being prejudiced against women of color. She took that back and disrespecting them. How do you see that playing into this?
Well, I mean, I think that there certainly is. President Trump is more than happy to try and augment any tensions that exist within the Democratic Party. There's this ongoing debate as to, you know, how strategic he's being when he does tweets like this, you know, about issues like that. But certainly he sees Nancy Pelosi fighting with this group of freshman Democrats as being something that's advantageous to him. He also sees, and I think this is safe to say, that by highlighting this group of four people who Nancy Pelosi somewhat famously dismissed as being just four votes in the House, which is, you know, obviously accurate to some extent, but by Trump lifting them up, he presents them as being his opponent to some extent, and it allows him to keep talking about things like socialism because of how this particular group of Congress members has been cast in the media. It is certainly the case that Donald Trump has embraced this, but the question, as Representative Lofgren pointed out, is, you know, what does this do to the party as well? And I think that the Democrats will very quickly sort of circle the wagons around this group, but also demonstrate that they are, in fact, just a part of a broad and diverse caucus on the Capitol Hill.
I also think one thing we could say that's axiomatic is that House Speaker Pelosi does not necessarily need Donald Trump to defend her. Let me get another caller on here. Carl, that's you. Welcome.
Yeah, to these people, everything is racist. What he said is not racist. What's racist about it? He said, go back to your countries instead of criticizing the United States. Go back to your country. Now, they're first generation. Yeah, most of them. Their parents.
Carl, they're American citizens. They're American citizens.
Okay, but what's racist about it? What? They're criticizing the United States.
They are criticizing the United States. That's correct. And you don't see anything having to do with color here or race at all.
What?
Okay.
Talking about countries.
All right. Let me let that stand. Let me thank you. Philip Bump, you want to take that? What's racist about
it? Sure. Yeah, I'm happy to. I mean, I think that there are two points I'd say. The first is I actually just went back and looked at what the people had said in terms of, you know, they're being critical of the United States. And, you know, these are pretty rare occurrences, right? There's not actually a whole lot there. It is much more often the case that they're being criticized for being un-American simply because of the politics that they espouse, which is obviously a different thing.
Isn't that also an old trope? It's like people used to say to African-Americans, go back to Africa. They would say,
oh, well, yeah. I mean, that's the other aspect of this. Yes, there is an aspect of this. The fact that these are four women of color, three of whom are born in the United States, several of whom have connections to people who were born overseas, you know, but then again, so does President Trump, right? I mean, this goes back to when President Trump disparaged Haiti and Africa using a vulgar term, and he disparaged immigrants from those countries, but embraced immigrants from Norway. It shows the double standard in who Donald Trump embraces as an acceptable immigrant to the United States, counting himself, for example, but not counting Ilhan Omar.
Well, here's another point of view from a listener who writes, the racist, extremely wrong, and despicable tweets by Donald Trump of the four junior women Democrats are totally disgusting, totally non-presidential, and a total insult to all fair-minded Americans. Scott, want to weigh in here?
Well, I was going to say, just let's not forget that Donald Trump, before he became president or even ran for president, was a sort of a founding member of the Birther Club, trying to suggesting and saying that Barack Obama was not born in the United States. I mean, that is fundamentally racist as well.
So a whole history here, going back to
Central Park Five. Lawsuits against his family in housing discrimination in New York City. I mean,
I was thinking about the full ad he took out for capital punishment for those young men who were eventually exonerated in New York.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, we'll get another caller on then, and that's from San Jose. We're joined by CMAC. Good morning.
Hello, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I'm really sick and tired of defending Trump and of hearing people defend Trump on radio saying that, you know, he's just Trump being Trump. This is what he promised. No, he's a racist. If you still support him, you are racist. Every single person who still supports him is a racist. And this is like saying, you know, Hitler ran for leadership saying, I will kill all the Jews. Then when he became leader, he killed all the Jews. That's okay because that's what he promised. It's not okay. It's not. We are descending into things that are becoming normal, which have been unthinkable 3 years ago when we actually had a real president in this country.
Not only normal, but unfortunately we're becoming inured to a lot of these things. We can use the word racism. For a while, there was a lot of hesitancy even using the word liar about President Trump, but racism is racism. I'm sorry, we're up on a break, and I know many of you also want to join this conversation. We have pretty much lines full here, but if you do want to join us, you can also join us by email, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website and post any questions or comments there at kqed.org/forum. We have Scott Schaefer with us in studio. I have Philip Bump on the line and Anita Kumar, and we'll return with your calls and emails. Stay tuned. You're listening to Forum on KQED. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We are focusing attention on the president's tweets and responses to those tweets, and also immigration issues and what appear to be divisions in the Democratic Party, but those divisions being to some extent taken advantage of, one might say, by the president. And we do want your responses and your questions and comments. So let me go to more callers. And we go to Girish in San Jose. Good morning.
Thanks for taking my call, Michael.
Sure.
I just had a comment to make. I mean, by discussing this in morning talk shows, we are playing right in the hands of Donald Trump. And honestly, I think we are wasting precious airtime, your time, and the guests' time by doing this. Within a day, within 24 hours, he's going to throw another flare, and we're all going to be behind that. And I think the environment is getting unnecessarily charged because of this. I think we shouldn't be doing that.
I understand that argument, and I sympathize with it, Girish. On the other hand, this is national and international news. This is something that it would be we'd be hard-pressed to ignore. Philip Bump, let me ask you to weigh in on that. It's an argument that one often hears, paying too much attention to outrageous and foolish things that come from, well, the highest office in the land.
Yeah, that's right. And one of the critiques that we hear is that by focusing on what Trump had to say over the course of the 2016 election, that indirectly helped Trump actually succeed. He got an enormous amount of airtime and not a lot of free publicity. The counterpoint to that, of course, is that Donald Trump continues to be very unpopular. The majority of Americans, and usually a strong majority of Americans, view him with disapproval and view him unfavorably because of reporting about what it is he's done and the positions that he's taken. Now, you know, whether or not it is necessarily the case that, that the news media must report on these particular tweets, obviously that's fairly subjective. But I think it is important to reinforce that Donald Trump is saying things that, whether or not everyone agrees, a lot of Americans feel are both unusually contentious and racially dubious, which is, you know, which is obviously abnormal for an American president. And I think is that that by itself is something that's worth lifting up.
Yeah, Scott Schaefer, want to say something here?
Well, I would just say that, you know, in the midterm elections, Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats were extremely disciplined about focusing their message on health care, in particular health care, because that's what voters care about. And they were very successful. And I think that to the caller's point, I mean, I agree with you. You know, this is significant enough that it is worthy of talking about. But how the Democrats respond, whether it's in the immediately afterwards or in the coming months, is going to be really important, because Donald Trump is a master at changing the subject, getting the media and everyone else to focus on something that he wants them to be focusing on. This division within the Democratic Party, this focus on racial and ethnic identity and citizenship, that helps him. I mean, it may also help Democratic turnout, but Democrats need to figure out what their message is going to be. And if it's going to be that, if it's going to be about Donald Trump, they're going to have a much harder time winning the 2020 election.
There have been some strange messages, though, from the Democrat side. I'm thinking particularly of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's spokesperson, her press secretary, who said some things about this is, you know, the worst thing that's ever happened. He was talking specifically, of course, about Democrats not being supportive enough of her position. So it's not only the division within the party, but some tweets that are pretty outrageous coming from that side.
Yeah, no, and Pelosi has spoken to the caucus about that. Yeah, her chief of staff is getting a lot of attention over the weekend for things he has tweeted and criticism from Hakeem Jeffries and others in the caucus. So yeah, they have their serious differences.
Comparing fellow Democrats to segregationists of the South. During the period of Jim Crow?
Yeah, it's not helpful to the Democrats, and they're going to have to deal with that internally. I mean, that's a personnel issue in a way, and his boss, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, needs to, you know, figure out how she's going to deal with that.
And we get more callers aboard here. Let me go next to you, Jean. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Hi. Yes, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to point out, acknowledge the obvious. Of course, it's abhorrent, and of course, it should be denounced, and the Republicans, of course, should join us in denouncing it. But I would point out that what would be dominating the news cycle, if not for his making this enormous, throwing this stink bomb into the middle of all of the reporters' laps, we would be talking about for one thing, the horrible stuff at in the border detention camps. We'd be talking about the fact that Jeffrey Epstein is now front and center in the nation's attention, and I think that actually might drive some reconsideration. You know, I don't know, but I think it might possibly cause the more religious, especially women, to reconsider their vote on him the first time, and also the fact that Robert Mueller is scheduled to testify in a couple of weeks, next week.
He was supposed to testify this week, Wednesday, but it's put off till next week. And you raise, an important point, Jean, and I'd like to get some response from you, Anita Kumar, on this. Anita, how much, it's often raised as a point, but the president diverting attention. I mean, he was a friend of Jeffrey Epstein's. He does have Mueller coming up and testifying before Congress. One wonders if there is a cause and effect here to some extent.
Right. I mean, people ask this all the time. And sometimes I feel like, I think it could be a little bit of both, right? But you are right. What was said at the top of this show, that he does like to be in the news cycle. There are times where he's not, and he doesn't like that. He likes to be back in the news. They are very good about changing the subject. And because there is so much going on, it's so easy to change the subject. I was working last week on some event at the White House, and I was thinking, oh, he's changed the subject. It was about Jeffrey Epstein every day last week. It was front and center on the front pages on cable news. His labor secretary, Alex Acosta, was caught in the middle of that. Obviously, he's now since resigned. But what he did last week when he just had some other event was he managed to make some news and change things. There's a lot of frustration. You mentioned earlier that the media and that other people respond or at least, report on what he says all the time. Obviously, he's the president of the United States, so we do need to care about what he says, whether it's good or bad. We do need to care about the policies coming out of the White House. There is so much going on that it's constant, and it's constantly knocking things off the front pages. So, the caller has a great point there, but there are so many significant things going on. If we didn't talk about them, didn't write about them, we wouldn't be knowing about ICE raids and asylum changes and all those other things.
This is a president who makes us, in many ways, desensitized to what's going on in so many areas of the world, let alone the United States. But here's a listener, Anita, let me get your response to this listener who writes, I believe that members of the press need to push harder to get statements on record from Republican members of Congress in reaction to Trump's latest racist tweets. This is a new low. Their silence is complicity in this regard, as it enables Trump to further divide this country.
I do think that is a very good point. It's remarkable how many times we've seen something where we say, well, surely Republicans are going to respond to this, and they really don't. This actually particularly surprised me in the last day or so, because we really haven't seen much at all. I think it's been a couple people. Even some of the regular critics haven't done it. But let's be clear. We've talked a lot about what's going on with the Democratic Party and how they're divided. It's Republicans have really learned their lesson over the last couple of years. Whether it's good or bad, if you go against Donald Trump, you pretty much, the political reality is you're pushed out of the Republican Party. You might have a primary opponent. You might not get reelected. You might feel that you need to retire. For whatever reason, that reality is very clear after a couple years. And so they're very mindful of that.
Now, they used to be divided in the early days of the Tea Party, but now the fractionalization seems more in the Democratic Party. You're going to say something, Scott Schaefer?
Well, I do wonder if there aren't some quiet conversations among people like, Justin Amash, Jeff Flake, about the possibility of a third party alternative to Donald Trump, a libertarian type. And I realize that it's sort of a fool's errand in a way, but there may be some Republicans who feel that that the president is taking the party over a cliff and the country with him, and that it is worth mounting some kind of a Ralph Nader type candidacy. I realize there are many, many, many obstacles to that, getting on the ballot and funding and all those things.
Ralph Nader just came out with a statement that he would be supportive of a Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren ticket, by the way.
Well, thank you very much. I do think that there's got to be a lot of consternation, but the silence is pretty deafening right now, with the exception on the state level. I know we earlier today, Dan Zoll, your producer for Forum, we were talking about Chad Mays, the former Assembly Republican leader, has been very outspoken on this, as have others in California. California had this fight in some ways in 1994 over Prop 187. And, of course, we've seen what's happened to the Republican Party since then. And I think there are some wiser Republicans outside of California who see that, that could be the fate of the National Republican Party.
It hurt Pete Wilson, though. Is it really going to be hurting Trump? And
right.
To what degree is it
going to
be?
Well, it didn't hurt
Trump.
Pete Wilson. That's the thing. Pete Wilson got reelected. He was behind.
It hurt him for the presidential bid.
I don't think so.
You don't think
no,
so?
I don't think so. He had other problems, like, yeah, let's not go into that. But the point is the party is in the ditch in California largely because of that.
Here's a comment in a tweet, Philip Bump. Let me go to you on this. This is from a listener named William who says, is Nancy Pelosi not impeaching Donald Trump, implicitly supporting him? I would think that between these tweets, the Mueller report, the proposed citizenship question, et cetera, there's no reason Trump shouldn't be impeached. And the so-called squad, these four Democratic congresswomen, were definitely in favor of impeachment. That's part of the schism with certainly President with Nancy Pelosi, isn't it, Philip Bump?
Yeah, it is. I mean, Pelosi's in a position here, which, I mean, we've obviously, this has been discussed ad nauseum to some extent, but Pelosi's in a position here where she both wants to preserve the Democratic House majority, which means preserving seats that were just won, including a lot of seats where President Trump won in 2016, but at the same time keeping her active liberal base happy. It's a tough position for anyone to be in. Part of what she was criticizing these four freshmen for doing was going after other Democrats. She's trying to keep unity, keep everyone on board. You know, the extent to which her deciding against moving forward on an impeachment vote is particularly problematic, I think that itself plays into the same challenge of what she's trying to balance. And quite frankly, I'm not sure there is a balance that can be drawn in a way that's going to make everybody happy.
There was a recent poll, and, you know, we get into the whole question of what credence we put in the polls, but it was, I think, the ABC and Washington Post, Philip Bump, that has Trump with the highest number of support now that he has had. He's, I think, at 44. Now, most of these people who support him say they look unfavorably upon his behavior or the sorts of things that we saw with these tweets. That base just doesn't seem to be diminished. I mean, it's really extraordinary. In fact, if anything, these numbers suggest that maybe there's even more support.
Well, I mean, it's a pretty subtle distinction. It is the highest point that he's seen in post-ABC reporting polling since he took office. But, it's a range, essentially, of about 10 points. He's had a narrower range than any president in modern polling history. And that's a function of the fact that Republicans really like him, Democrats really hate him, and independents tend to lean against him. That's been consistently the case. President Obama, for the last few years of his administration, was similarly sort of stagnant in the polls, but independents liked him more. And so the question here is, yes, it is the case that he is doing better than he has in post-ABC polling, but it is also the case that he hasn't really broken through at all, that his base remains fairly consistent, and all the movement is really, really small. And if his goal is re-election next year, barring some sort of weirdness like we saw in 2016, the fact that he can't move more people to stand with him is hugely problematic, especially because it's not like Democrats are at this point in time suddenly going to start, you know what, I like President Trump now. I mean, I think that's just not going to happen, and that's a problem for him.
Well, Anita Kumar, we did hear, and it has been a long time since we've heard, from Hillary Clinton, and she pretty much was critical of the president and stood behind these representatives. Should we be hearing from President Obama?
Yeah, you know, it's a really interesting thing. When President Trump came in and President Obama was leaving, I used to hear from a lot of people, saying, where is President Obama? He needs to be out there as the leader, you know, right as he was leaving, still the sort of the leader of the Democratic Party. And I think he didn't feel comfortable with that. As you know, in the past, presidents sort of let the next president do their thing and not criticize. Now, obviously, Donald Trump is a very, very different president, and I'm not saying these are, the same, it's not the same as in the past, and I fully agree with that. I do think that now, though, we've entered a new phase, which is we're not going to hear so much or pay so much attention to Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama as we are to these Democrats that are running for president. These are the new people that are going to lead the Democratic Party, and eventually we're going to have a nominee who is going to be the leader of the party. And so I think those are the people that we'll hear from, that want to be heard, and that eventually sort of will lead the party.
And when you mentioned the ICE raids before, Scott Schaefer, I couldn't help thinking about the second Democratic debate where the question was put to them, would you arrest someone who was undocumented, who had no other felony on the record or anything of that sort? And every hand was no.
Well, I think the question was, should we decriminalize border crossings and make it, right now it's a felony. And the question was, should we make it lower priority, in terms of law enforcement? I think that was the question.
Well, we have a different memory of the question, but let me read a comment here from Lori, and then we'll get your response to this. Lori writes, as reprehensible as President Trump's comments were, I also am very upset by the comments of the four Democrats against Speaker Pelosi, who I think deserves a lot of respect for her leadership abilities. Her comments and actions, in addition to being disrespectful, are divisive to the Democratic Party and harmful to our chances in the 2020 election.
Yeah, I think, you know, Pelosi, more than anyone, or as much as anyone, is really focused on 2020. And I think that is the problem that the party faces right now, is figuring out what is the path to winning the White House. And there are huge disagreements in terms of what kind of nominee should there be. What should the message be? Should we take the party further to the left? Should we have a nominee who is a person of color to increase turnout? I mean, so there are all these questions.
And impeachment.
And impeachment. Yes, exactly. And I think that what, you know, this sort of thing, in some ways, I was wondering over the weekend if Trump isn't trying to goad, this is just another step in him trying to goad the Democrats into impeaching him, because I, as Pelosi has said, that she doesn't think that would be helpful. Tom Steyer is now in the race. He obviously thinks it is the right thing to do. So that schism within the party is going to continue. But, we will see. And by the way, I misspoke a moment ago. I said illegal entry is a felony. It's not. It's a misdemeanor. But I think the question was, should we deprioritize that as a law enforcement issue?
Yeah, I think that was the pith of it. But let me get some more callers aboard here. Joe joins us. Joe, you're on.
Yeah, I think everybody's missing the point. I mean, half the country, roughly half, supports him. The other hates him. I think what he actually said in the tweet was, go back to those countries, fix the problem, then come back and show us how to do it. I mean, if we don't start figuring out how to talk to one another and stop with this, are you telling me half the country is racist? No. Do they have maybe different ideas about how the country is run? I think more, it's more based on ideology and how you want to run the country than race.
Well, there are a lot of people, and let me go to you this, Philip Bum, there are a lot of people who simply were fed up with being called racist because they were opposed to certain policies. We saw essentially from the right-wing media to what extent that was played upon and what extent President Trump played upon it.
Yeah, no, I always harken back to, there's a writer from the New York Times, Jamel Bowie, who writes really smart stuff on race. And one of the points that he's made in the past, which I think is worth highlighting here, is that there are differing views on what constitutes racism, right? There is, certainly everyone agrees that the Klan burning a cross on someone's lawn, that is a racist act, right? But there are subtler forms of racism that are pointed out by people, and the line can get blurry, and people can disagree on whether or not things cross the line. So, you know, the defense that we just heard from that caller, that he said go back to the countries and then come back and fix it, that's a line that was actually propagated, too, by the campaign itself trying to defend what Trump had said. I think it is on its face not a very valid response to the issue. But whether or not it is racist to say this thing is something that people disagree on. And I think that it is, you know, that those who suggest that this is a racist act by the president are relying upon some nuance that not everyone shares. And I think that part of the challenge and part of the evolution we've seen over the past few years is that we are having a more nuanced conversation about racism. We've seen, particularly among Democrats, a big increase in understanding of a particular view of racism, particularly following the Black Lives Matter movement. And I think that that's part of the tension here, is that people simply don't agree on what constitutes an actual racist act.
Well, at first, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez said that there were many who said that she was playing the race card. Scott Schaefer?
Well, I just wanted to comment on the wisdom or lack thereof of what President Trump is doing. Democrats, yes, what he said over the weekend united Democrats. But I think it's important to remember that there is within, among Democrats, and I mean just rank and file Democrats, there is a wide range of opinion about illegal immigration, crossing the border, coming into this country illegally. Should they be allowed a path to citizenship? Should they be given health care, as we've just done recently in California for young undocumented immigrants up to the age of 26? You know, what is the direction? I think Trump understands that there is a market, and pardon that word, but there is a place among a large swath of the electorate for criticism of some of the policies that some of the Democrats running for president are embracing. And I think that he's trying to exploit that, trying to remind, say, swing voters, you know, Democrats maybe who voted for Obama but then voted for Trump, that that the policies that some of the Democrats are going toward is not one that they are comfortable with.
Now, you mentioned socialism before. I mean, to bring that up and also to bring up the idea of open borders scares many American people who may be, well, disapproving of Donald Trump.
Yeah, no, I think so. I don't think I brought up socialism, but certainly certainly the president does on a regular
basis. Well, I thought
you'd
mentioned it earlier in another context.
Well, and Lindsey Graham this morning, he one-upped it and said they were communists, these four women, which is, you know, bizarre.
Let me read a comment from a listener who says, the right has learned how to move together in lockstep, side by side with the religious right, multinational corporate interests, racists, neo-Nazis, and much of middle America. Ugly as this is, Democrats need to learn this lesson now. And here's Amy who says, what can we as citizens do to show our adamant objections to President Trump's deplorable racist tweets? We cannot remain quiet. This president is working hard to normalize his outrageous actions, and it's terrifying to see what's going on in our country. Any wisdom to shed on that, Anita Kumar, up at covering the White House?
Think,
what do they listen to?
Sorry?
I say you've been covering the White House. I'm wondering, what do they listen to and what can normal citizens do, really?
Well, President Trump watches television. We know that. And I
mainly one network. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, though, I you're right. He does watch Fox, but he is in tune with what other networks are doing because he likes to comment on them. I mean, this is a president who, for better or for worse, is really conscious of the publicity that he's getting. You know, I was mentioned the labor secretary last week when I was covering that. It wasn't about what Secretary Acosta had done or didn't do in regards to that plea deal with Jeffrey Epstein. It was all whether he was going to keep his job was all about what the publicity was going to be like. Well, how did people respond to his news conference? And when the president realized that it was all negative, even though he thought the news conference went okay, but the publicity was negative, there was a response, right? You know, and he's no longer secretary. So I use as an example to say this White House is very conscious of how they appear and what people are saying. I know that, you know, that is sometimes a way people get him to respond and to react and to do something.
Well, just we forget how fast, because of these fast news cycles, that the president also spoke about an American citizen who was a judge in terms of his Latino identity back originally from Indiana, a Hoosier, no less. And then we also have the strange paradox of President Trump referring to Acosta, whom you just mentioned, Anita, as being a Hispanic, of Hispanic extraction or of Hispanic descent. I mean, as if he's saying, you know, he's putting that out there for some reason.
He does. He tends to do that. He has a couple things. He says that, and he also talks about where people go to school. Very important to him. So, yeah, I mean, you know, if you ask President Trump, we've all heard him say this. He says he's the least racist person that there could ever be. I mean, he says that often. He talks about that often, but then you also have to look at what his actions are, what his administration policy is, and some of these comments that he makes. So you take that all together.
Least racist and a candidate who is the best for women and will do more for women and who is really the most honorable candidate and the most presidential. I mean, there have been so many superlative statements said about himself that I think he probably has the almanac record on that. Let me get another caller on here. Judy, join us. You're on the air.
Hello. I think we're losing really valuable time dealing with Trump, because he's not going to be responsive to any of this, but the CEO and the board of Twitter are what we really need to focus on, I think, because he needs to be blocked. He is so completely destructive to this country.
All right. I appreciate your sentiments. We'll let this comment stand. A listener writes that Ralph Nader did not endorse Elizabeth Warren and Kamala Harris. He endorsed Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. We'll have to double check on that. But let me thank you for that correction, if indeed you're. Let me get another caller on in the meantime. And Paloma joins us. Paloma, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Hello. Thank you for having me. I feel like this isn't just about politics. This is about the fact that if the President of the United States can make a comment like that, which is racist. People are talking about the nuances of whether or not that's a racist statement. When people say something like that, it means they're trying to diminish the people's authority. People said that all the time about Obama, like, oh, you're not actually from here, you're from somewhere else. It's something that's said as an insult on elementary school yards. It's directly racist, and it also is representational of the Border Patrol group that had that Facebook group that they were all sharing, where they got in trouble now for sharing racist comments about the immigrants on the border, and went when our leader, when the leader of our country says things like that, that means that hate crimes trickle down and hate crimes have gone up since he's been in office. And he's just allowed to say things like that. And clearly we're all here talking about it. But what my main statement is that this is not just about politics. This is not about like what Nancy Pelosi said or da-da-da. Like that the caller that called in, he is questioning it. And that I just feel like nobody's safe, honestly. Like if he can be that racist, if Trump can be that racist, then that means that racism rises and rises and rises, and people of color aren't safe.
Well, Paloma, thank you for those comments. Appreciate hearing from you. Scott Schaefer?
Well, I think Paloma's onto something. And, I think that when you think of his comments about these ICE raids, threatened ICE raids that didn't apparently materialize, I mean, all these things have huge human impacts on families where there are mixed immigration status, where people are worried about whether or not they're going to be able to stay in the country or their parents are. I mean,
why announce them, though? That's one of the major questions.
Well, because he didn't want.
I mean, if you're going to do it, right. Obama did it, but he didn't announce it.
Well, they happen all the time. You know, these kinds of raids happen. Not raids, but these enforcement actions happen all the time. And, you know, I think perhaps he didn't want, you know, the weekend spent talking about Jeffrey Epstein and his connections to him and this child sex trafficking plea deal, the secret deal that Acosta was involved in 2008. He's a real master at changing the subject. But I think Paloma's point is worth remembering, that these things have impacts beyond politics, beyond elections, but on families and on people in the community. And we need to remember that.
Very important point indeed. And Philip Bump, Paloma also mentioned those at the border. Quick response from you, because in your column you said that President Trump was talking about with border guards before he even probably ever met with any of them or established
right,
any kind of conversations, yeah?
I mean, that's the thing that's worth remembering, is that at his campaign announcement, he said, I hear from Border Patrol agents all the time and tell me that Mexicans sending rapists and problematic people. It was him trying to use his voice of authority that he didn't even have. And I think he is a creature of conservative media. It was something he was seeing on Fox News coverage of Border Patrol agents.
Yeah, we got to leave it there, unfortunately. Philip Bump, thanks so much for joining us. Philip Bump from The Washington Post, Anita Kumar of Politico, and Scott Schaefer of KQED. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.